Tom Christensen, and I teach at Lutheran Bible Institute in Issaquah, Washington. Have spent 1 year there. Prior to that, 2 years, and went back to school in Chicago at the Lutheran School of Theology. Prior to that, for 16 years, my wife Sharon and myself were ALC missionaries in Cameroon in West Africa. I have the semblance of a map here, and Cameroon is located right here in this corner, Central African Republic right next door. And there we worked with especially the Baya people, and I should write that on the board too. That's spelled G-B. And this one. G-B-A-Y-A. I'll tell you a little bit about the Baya people in a few moments. But first I would like to tell you a little story about a Norwegian friend of mine who wanted to catch a train in Cameroon to go up country. Now there's just one train a day that goes from the capital Yaoundé up country to Ngaoundéré. And as my Norwegian missionary friend drove into the depot in one of the towns on the train line, he noted that the train was already pulling out of the depot. So he grabbed his suitcase and made a run for it. And as he was running down the tracks, trying to hop on the train, the porter leaned out and yelled at him, "No need to hurry, sir. This is yesterday's train." That's just a little bit funny, I think. It's also kind of painful in this sense that it recalls for me many sort of painful experiences of my own over a 14, 15 year period spent in Africa. I look at that little story more and more as symbolic. I think it has something to tell me as a Westerner, for one thing, reminding me that in the midst of missionary planning, when those plans get interrupted, as they were for my missionary friend, that we might think about letting many of our plans be opportunities for listening to the African way of life and to those deep things in their midst which mediate life. What I am going to share with you this afternoon is part of a 10 sessions which I've called Foreshadowings of the Gospel, Leaves for the Healing of the Nations, Examples from Baya Ritual. I think that one major purpose of Christian mission is to invite and to encourage people to tell their own story. These presentations about leaves for the healing of the nations represent my attempt to listen to the Baya story as they have shared it with me over a 14-year period. And in more specific terms, these presentations represent an inquiry into the meanings of soteriological themes which appear in Baya ritual symbolism. For those of you who have not had the fun and privilege of sitting in a seminary classroom, soteriology is a word with a Greek root, soter, which means savior. soteriological themes are about salvation. Salvation themes and descriptions of Baya rituals are little and some not so little Baya stories of salvation from their traditional perspective, a pre-gospel perspective in this case. And I attempt to relate those traditional Baya meanings to some New Testament meanings of salvation in Jesus Christ. That has become something of my passion in the last years. I noted that one major purpose of Christian mission is to invite people to tell their own story. I also believe that the major purpose of Christian mission is always and everywhere to proclaim the gospel of salvation in Jesus Christ in word and in deed, and to invite all peoples to faith in him. But in order to accomplish that purpose clearly and effectively, we are sent as the Father sent Jesus on live-in missions to listen to people's stories and then with courage and in the Spirit to share a word from God with those people, a word that comes into their personal stories, inviting them to life and a way of life in Christ Jesus. I'm going to try to give you a glimpse of the Baya people and their story by way of ritual descriptions in which I see foreshadowings of the gospel. Well, I think I can only see foreshadowings of the gospel in the light of the gospel. I believe that the gospel has the power to evoke new meanings in the stuff of life all around us and within us. And I'm aware that some speakers are accused of numbing their audiences with superfluous detail. I just picked up that line in a recent Time magazine article discussing some of our beloved politicians. But I need to warn you that when I look at Baya rites, Baya symbols, I do pay attention to detail. I do take the time to look at detail because I have found that there are some fascinating details, especially in a particular Baya symbol, a tree called by the Baya people the Sore tree. And that looks like sore when we write it. But it is really two syllables, as the Baya say it, sore. I am interested in details in that particular symbol, which in the light of the gospel actually draw my attention to Jesus in a fresh way. Because that message, that gospel message, has the power to evoke new meanings. I'm continually fascinated by the way that the living word of salvation seeks to come to new expression for us in our very midst, like in Elmer's sermon last night, and in the midst of all peoples and all the earth. And I am hopeful that that witness might be discovered in cultural and religious phenomena, which are not simply signs of a universal human search for God, not something simply cooked up by human ingenuity, but rather, as St. Bonaventure might put it, footprints of God in our midst, who seeks by many deep and mysterious ways, alluding to first letter, from the letter to the Hebrews, who seeks in many deep and mysterious ways to bring all people to life and to faith in him through Jesus Christ, in whom all things hold together. I think there's very good reason to pay attention to certain cultural and religious details which might just draw our attention to salvation in Jesus Christ in a way that is new for us. Because the explanation regarding the origin of those details ultimately does not reside in human creativity, but in God's grace and in his will that all people find their home in him through his son Jesus. Now, who are the Baya people? Over 1 million Baya people live in Cameroon and in the Central African Republic. And the Baya who have contributed to my own symbolic search come from a great variety of clan groups and clan areas in Cameroon and Central African Republic, and their experiences span 3 generations of Baya history. But the people whose ritual traditions I studied and can nevertheless be said to share in a broad way the following characteristics. First of all, a common language, in spite of many dialects within this group of 1 million people and over that large area, a common social structure with which significant values and mores are associated. Many socio-religious institutions, beliefs, and practices expressed, for example, in folk tales. They have a very rich oral tradition and a very rich ritual tradition. Purification rites, reconciliation rites, rites of initiation, rites of exorcism are some of the things that I'd like to share with you. They have a similar political and economic history, which includes a reliance for at least the past 100 years on the cultivation of manioc as the basis of their diet. A common love for hunting and for fishing, and so many of the rites, the rituals among the people are associated with the quest for food. In hunting or in fishing. Similar relations with contiguous ethnic groups, similar relations with Islamic invaders having come out of the Northwest, the Fulani, the Hausa peoples in the early 19th century, came into the area occupied by the Baya people and that's about as far south and east as they went. There was something of a confrontation between those Islamic invaders and the Baya people. There's still something of a confrontation there. They had contact with German colonizers, then after the First World War, French administrators, as they were brought into French political and economic communities. And finally, French-oriented nationhood for both of those nations in 1960. And also similar orientations toward Christian missions. In general, a very open and receptive orientation to Christian mission, both Roman Catholic and, since the 1920s, Lutheran. So the gospel of salvation in Jesus has been in their midst, proclaimed in their midst, since the 1920s. I associate my own symbolic search among the Baya people with a sermon illustration I heard 10 to 12 years ago from a Baya preacher whose name was Remy Mbari. Remy spoke about the meaning of Jesus' death for his parishioners by reminding them what happens on a Baya hunt. Adamu's family may be invited to join Buba's family on a hunt in an area designated as belonging to Buba's family. Now on that hunt, Adamu is gored by a buffalo, and his blood is shed on Buba's ground. Before any hunting can proceed in that area again, an elder from Adamu's family is called upon to bless the land where blood was shed. Shed blood and spoken blessing effect a change. For now that land and all the animals, birds, and fish that are in that area no longer belong to Buba, but now they belong to Adamu and to his family because his blood was shed there. Remy explained to his congregation that something like that happened when God sent his only son, Jesus, to live on this earth with us. And his blood was shed right here on this land where we walk. And God thereby blessed this earth and all who live here. All of us who live on this earth now belong to God and to his son Jesus, said Remy, because Jesus shed his blood here. Now the wave of tongue clicking and verbal affirmations among those who were assembled for worship that day indicated that they had understood the meaning of Remy's analogy. His analogy, which relates a theme of salvation, a soteriological theme from the New Testament, with a theme of salvation from bioritual symbolism, has also done much to motivate my research into bioritual symbolism. My own search has tried to be sensitive to semantic correspondences or meaningful connections between meanings and bioritual symbols and meanings we encounter in Christian scriptures. What I'm trying to do is to pick up on something I see happening in imaginative bio-Christian preaching and to encourage their natural way of doing theology or expressing the Christian faith to keep right on happening. I'm not trying to provide Africans with a brand new method for doing theology, but rather enter into a process already alive there, evoked by the gospel itself in a natural way in that place, among those people, and sort of cheer it on toward further growth and deeper expression. As I taught Christian scriptures among the Baya, I was simultaneously engaged in a symbolic search whereby I tried to encourage Baya Christians to think and to speak about rites and symbols experienced by them as significant and meaningful at some point in their own lives and or in the lives of their parents. I also encouraged them to relate those meanings to scriptural meanings and to their present way of Christian living. How about some scriptural rationale for that kind of thing? In Acts 14, 16 to 17, for example, we have one example from the New Testament where God's gracious activity among people is attested. An activity which comes prior to the explicit proclamation of definitive salvation in Jesus. In past generations, he allowed all the nations to walk in their own ways, says Paul. He did not leave himself without witness. That witness and the nature of that witness has long intrigued me as I've worked with African people. As I've sought to understand what we might call, what I would suggest we might call, an older testament among the Baya, an older testament, I think, might be an appropriate way of saying something about God's gracious commitment to his creation and to his creatures. I've been led by by our friends on a journey through their perceptions of ultimate reality, mediated especially in terms of ritual symbols. And my own search and reflection has come to focus more and more on one of these ritual symbols. I refer to this tree, the sori tree, some part or another of which, the leaves or the branches, the barks and or the roots, is highly visible in a surprising variety of ritual contexts. Now, the Gbaya named this tree sori. The botanists label it Annona senegalensis according to its species and Annonaceae according to its family. But the Gbaya also named this tree Soregamo. Sore, calm, pacify, or cool thing, which is a name and a metaphor which indicate that in Gbaya culture, sore is perceived as more than a mere tree. One brief example will suffice at present to evoke some questions about sore as a ritual symbol. Sore, say the Gbaya, is for cooling murder. If a person from Adzia's family has killed someone from Abo's family, a sore branch may be thrown, literally thrown, between those two families in order to prevent revenge. In this relatively simple example, we encounter a little piece of Gbaya culture which gives rise to reflection and makes us wonder, what does sore really mean for the Gbaya? What are some wider implications of this single example as regards putting peace in the midst of Gbaya people? Are there other examples of how sore is used by the Gbaya which enlarge our understanding of its meaning? Not only for the Gbaya, but perhaps even for us who are not Gbaya. These questions reach a deeper level of inquiry when someone attends Lutheran worship services or Roman Catholic worship services in Garoumbulai in Cameroon on a Sunday and hears the Gbaya preacher speak of Jesus as sore cool thing. Our sore cool thing. Now, this naming of Jesus as sore is not an isolated case, but it is part of a symbolic theological search being conducted by many Gbaya Christians. Now, that search is not being carried on by Gbaya Christians who have what we might think are the sophisticated tools of some symbolic anthropology or philosophy or systematic theology, but it is taking place most significantly in Gbaya teaching and in Gbaya preaching. For examples, in sermons such as the one I cited by Remy, where a Gbaya preacher's analogical imagination is free to discover semantic correspondences, meaningful connections. These people have lived with the reality of sore in their midst, and they are also living now with the reality of the Christian gospel in their midst. The proclamation of that gospel itself evokes a search for the meaning of cultural symbols which mediate ideas of ultimate reality. The symbolism of Christian scriptures is brought into conversation with the symbolism of Gbaya ritual traditions, and we may be expectant and we may be hopeful about what happens in that encounter where faith meets faith. We may be hopeful, for example, that our attention will be drawn in meaningful terms to what God has already done in and through Jesus of Nazareth, and to the faith that what God has done in Jesus is an act of salvation of both universal and definitive significance. What that means for the Gbaya must be appropriated by them, to some extent at least, in terms, in symbols they already know. This conversation, therefore, centers in the search for analogies within the two symbolic systems, and thus we may ask the question, well, what does Sore have to do really with Jesus, and what does Jesus have to do with Sore? If this search by Gbaya Christians has issued in the proclamation, Jesus, our Sore cool thing, we're looking at a name and a metaphor. Both the name and the metaphor invite careful reflection. If indeed Jesus can be named Sore, does that name teach us dimensions of Jesus we have not yet seen? In what sense do symbolic meanings of Sore draw our attention to Jesus? To the Jesus we have already encountered in New Testament scriptures? And in what sense has the proclamation of Jesus and his kingdom among the Gbaya evoked an unprecedented reflection by them on Sore? Well, my way of presentation as we move into some look, first of all, at the physical properties of Sore and then gradually get into ritual descriptions is essentially a dialectical way of moving. First of all, for example, I consider some implications of the peace brought by Sore cool thing in by a ritual, and then move toward reinterpretation as reinterpreted by Gbaya Christians as they speak of Jesus, our Sore cool thing. And in this process of interpretation, I first interpret certain ritual contexts, each of which represents an episode. Each ritual context is an episode in the drama of ordinary Gbaya life, where that life is, in fact, threatened. Gbaya rituals are descriptions of episodes where life is threatened and where the Gbaya are coping with the threat of death in their midst. Some kind of salvation is sought and provided in each case by Sore cool thing. So many of its meanings from Gbaya ritual correspond in a striking way to New Testament meanings of Jesus. Yet there is a newness in Jesus that eludes any simple or undialectical correspondence. When I describe how such life-threatening context might be reinterpreted by Jesus, my intention is not simply to repeat meanings of Sore which have a clear correspondence with New Testament meanings. Rather, I let those original meanings stand, but now with their various meanings of Sore reinterpreted by Jesus and by his cross. And so there is a four-step movement that I see emerging in that process, a matter of retention, of retaining original meanings. Secondly, a critique of those meanings in the light of the gospel message of salvation in Jesus. Thirdly, as the Gbaya Christians work with those meanings are expanded by way of analogy, by way of metaphor. And finally, there is a transformation of those original meanings to say a new thing. There is the jolt of a new center in those meanings as Jesus becomes the new content of Sore for Gbaya Christians. I think that something like that happens as we look at New Testament names of Jesus. For example, Jesus is a lamb, where meanings were picked up by Jewish Christians. For an animal used in ritual sacrifice in their religious practices, and used to name Jesus, a metaphor was born. A way of doing theology is there, and that metaphor is expanded. Jesus is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And similar also, Jesus is named Son, or Lord, or Great High Priest, or on and on, the titles, the names we have for Jesus in the New Testament, Shepherd, all of these names were broken and reopened and given the jolt of a new content as Jesus became that new content. When the Baya are asked to tell about the Sore tree, their response is immediate and very consistent. They say that Sore is for calming or cooling things. The Baya expression communicates in a straightforward manner that Sore is for something. Its explicit purpose within the broadest context of human life and relationships is for cooling, for calming things. Well, why is the Sore tree associated with coolness and peace? The most consistent Baya reply refers to its soft character, one of its physical properties. The Baya relate coolness to softness, and by implication, hotness to hardness. Sore is a mokate, they say, a soft tree of the savanna grasslands, unlike the imposing hardwood trees of the gallery forest. The Baya might say that the Sore tree has a soft heart, anamokase, literally a soft liver, or that the Sore tree is a gangi, a calm, a reasonable person. The Sore tree has a soft, moist, fibrous wood. It is also a common Baya idiom to personify trees, to name persons, to name people by reference to a tree. Any calm, reasonable person who contributes to peace and to well-being in the community may be called soregamo, sore cool thing. As regards the character of a sore tree, the adjective moka may mean not only soft but also reasonable and humble. Mokase, soft heart or soft liver, means humility. A Baya proverb says, korobasore na, lightning does not take the sore tree. It is literally a soft, an insignificant, common little tree which does not attract lightning, as do the tall hardwood trees. But the meaning here goes deeper for the Baya, because dua persons or witches are said to transform themselves into lightning in order to kill people. Witchcraft, however, has no power over the sore tree or over someone who bears a sore branch in his or her hand. For the Baya, then, meanings and values associated with the softness and with the humble character of the sore tree are linked to its capacity to cool and to pacify things. And sore is one of the most common little bushes of the grasslands inhabited by the Baya people. It can grow in soil which produces very few other living things. Some of these meanings now, you might let your imagination work with these meanings for potential relationship with meanings of Jesus in the New Testament. The sori can grow in soil which produces very few other living things. It requires very little to live on. The themes of humility and simplicity are suggested by these interrelated meanings, all connected with an aspect of sori's physical character, its softness, its tenderness, its flexibility. Another very important physical characteristic of sori, a characteristic which links it to several other Baya symbols, is the slippery substance, the mucilaginous substance, between its thin bark and soft wood. If sori is for washing the dirt caused, the pollution caused by killing a person or a taboo animal, which is called simbo, a term we might translate taboo, which refers to the violation of life, the principle of life among the Baya. Now, if sori is used for washing the dirt, the pollution caused by such violation of life, it's because bad and dangerous things slip right off the sori, according to the Baya. That's why lightning does not take the sori tree, leaving it unharmed. Sickness, too, slips right off the sori tree. Sori's slipperiness calms and cools a feverish, inflamed body. Just as bushfires fail to destroy sori, sori deflects heat from human and animal bodies to restore the coolness of good health. The bad things which slip off sori may be hot, or they may be dirty. Now that in our own use of the term slippery in a figurative way, it has some negative connotations, doesn't it? However, you might think of some examples of Jesus in the New Testament when people wanted to throw stones at him and he seemed to slip right between them. As regards the naming of Jesus, Joe Sittler, in a little article called The Haunting Allure of Jesus, talks about how Jesus seems to, the meaning of who Jesus is, seems to slip right out of any names we can give him. Sori cleans as sori cools. In the Baya idiom, ha warmo missa, that the way to fresh experiences of human life may be clear and clean and open. Sori cools and cleans new beginnings, that they might be blessed for life and freed from death. From these interrelated meanings, the theme of sori as the way emerges, a theme which is enriched by sori's relationship with several other slippery symbols, has a deep relationship with blood, which is slippery, or with oil, or with eggs, or with certain other slippery leaves, or with mud. Oil and mud, for example, with sori are often used to anoint, to bring a blessing. Or with a slippery pole in the midst of the initiation camp of the Baya boys, initiation. Or catfish, a slippery fish. Or passing through the legs of the peace thrower, a woman peace thrower. one session I would like to spend on rituals involving this woman peace thrower among the Gbaya, who is also called Soregamo, Sore cool thing among the Gbaya. All of these uses are so that the way through the threat of death back to life might be cool and clear and open. And for the Gbaya, Sore is that way. One additional physical property of Sore, which lies behind another cluster of meanings, is the matter of its strong, odorless leaves. Sore is humble, but not fragile. Mature Sore leaves are large and strong, ideal for wrapping fresh meat. Young Sore leaves are clean and absorbent, useful for wiping dirt from people. The plant itself is resistant and resilient, capable of taking much physical abuse. It can be burned, it can be broken or cut apart, but it will grow right back again. And it yields an edible fruit, a favorite among Baya children. These characteristics issue in a theme, Sore's strength. The kind of strength exhibited by Sore is echoed in two of the notches on a stick used during the initiation of Baya boys. Each boy during the initiation carries a Sore stick, and on that stick there are 11 notches. And each notch represents some values expressed by the initiation, or within the initiation. And the first notch, each of these is expressed by a proverb. And the first notch on the Sore stick says, if someone tries to kill you, you must survive. A value here about evasive action. Evasive action on the hunt or in combat is highly valued by the Gbaya. Secondly, what happens when you show off your strength? This is the second notch. What happens when you show off your strength? You'll find a battle. The strongest person, according to the Gbaya, is the one who remains cool and reasonable and peaceful, not the one who shows off his muscles. The heat of such aggressive, violent strength and quarreling leads to death, not to life. So if we let our imagination, our analogical imagination, work with some of these meanings, as I've tried to present, especially in some of the physical properties of the Sore in this first session, we might already have seen some Christian meanings foreshadowed in some of these Baya meanings, foreshadowed or anticipated. And we might then be encouraged to move from the interpretation of Sore in traditional Baya terms to a reinterpretation of Sore in Christian terms, which is at the same time an interpretation of who Jesus is, as expressed metaphorically by the Baya, by the symbolic vocabulary available to the Baya people. For example, we may say, in just a few suggestive ways this way of thinking may take, we may say that the love of God in Christ Jesus has the amazing capacity to grow like the Sore tree in the worst soils. Paul said, I'm the chief of sinners. The living Christ is incomparably resilient, and his new life springs up in us over and over again from charred stumps like a holy seed. Jesus, our sore cool thing, wipes our wounds and bears the brunt of our angry words in the midst of our personal relationships, where he lives with us and each other, transforming us to live for one another. In him we are given the hopeful alternative to domination by self-interest. In Jesus, our sore cool thing, we may receive into our lives the power to transform dangerous, life-threatening encounters into fresh, life-giving, peaceable, cooling, and cleansing participation in one another's lives. These are some suggested meanings growing out of sore cool thing. Now we just open it up to discussion at this point and questions from you at this point. Asking you, first of all, if being exposed to some of these meanings in sore, can you run with that metaphor? Sore cool thing. One beauty of metaphor is its open-endedness.
I can see where you get this kind of insight and understanding with your Christian background and revelation of God. But where do these natives get their ethical implication in these kind of situations? Is that a remnant of the image of God, which is also in the natives, and therefore this shows itself in a way which they can grasp and take a hold of? Or where does it come from in their life? In your life, I can see this, but I can't see it in their life. Where does it come from? I thought there was a total depravity of man, and therefore no opportunity for this kind of ethical or interpretation of a savior, if you will. Or bring our peace, if you will.
I guess that's why I pick up on this word that I mentioned from Acts, where Paul says that God has not left himself without a witness anywhere among any peoples. And I believe that there are these footprints of God, if I can use that metaphor, among peoples. That when you ask about origins, the origins are not to be sought in some kind of universal human search for God, or that these ethical values, not simply attributed to human ingenuity, but to God's grace. And that's why I am comfortable with using a term Older Testament as I look at some of these witnesses in an African culture, which in the light of the gospel may be seen as foreshadowings of the gospel, anticipating the gospel to come to full expression only in that proclamation of salvation in Jesus.
But in these things,
so I see them as preparations. It's a preparation, fulfillment way of looking at things.
But in these things, they already have the gospel.
I would say that they have a way of experiencing what I, as a Christian, would call God's grace in their midst. A way of expressing, again in the light of the gospel, His will that all people find their home in God through Christ. And what one of the things which is so fascinating for me in these symbols are these semantic correspondences, these meaningful connections between Sore and Jesus, which do not appear in the way we're talking, the way I'm talking about them, until there is that proclamation of the gospel message, which evokes some new meaning in that stuff of life in their midst. Does that make some sense?
Yeah. Isn't this part of this whole experiential theology, which has become very strong in the last 20 years? You know, these people experiencing these things. And then I was thinking, sooner or later the missionaries can all go home. And is it possible that you can have a very large priesthood, ministerhood, from among the people themselves? Did you ever feel they didn't need you?
In many ways, they don't need certain things which I might have thought I should be bringing them. But I do affirm the presence mm-hmm. of brothers and sisters in their midst in, for example, a midwifing way, but always to proclaim that specific message mm-hmm. of salvation in Jesus. And I also have experienced that, on the one hand, they invite us to enter into this process of reflection. And do not say, missionary, go home. I have not experienced that. But, as sort of a cool thing, in that peaceful way also to enter into that process of discovery of how that message of salvation might always be expressed in fresh new ways in their midst, and perhaps in their way bring that message to us in a fresh way. And I have to say that, having lived in their midst, and it's like saying that the gospel or the word does not return empty, as we hear in Isaiah, that proclaimed there, it is coming back to me in a fresh way via, in this case, African symbols, re-expressed by them for us. Well,
this is quite a little different, but I've had some contact with American Indian, mm-hmm. and this lady who was a preacher in the Wesleyan Church, the Methodist Wesleyan Church, and she made the accusation against most of the churches, well, against Christianity, that we first came and destroyed their culture, and all she said, all we needed was Christ to give meaning to their culture. So that had some similarity.
Yeah, on the one hand, the longer time I spent among the Gbaya, the greater appreciation, you know, maybe as a young missionary, I came to certain criticisms of a former missionary way of doing things and that destruction of culture. On the one hand, I do affirm the work carried on by pioneer missionaries, and the longer I was there, the more I appreciated that. On the other hand, a lot of that putting down of traditional Baya culture certainly did take place, and what is happening in that place today is, in a sense, a search for identity, for those roots. And I think that that's why I started out. I think one way to do Christian mission is to listen to other people's stories The purpose of Christian mission is always to proclaim the gospel of salvation in Jesus. I firmly believe that. And yet for that to happen, it is not via destruction of such things as I'm trying to share here, but to see those in a different light, and that the decisions of what might be retained and what to be cast out is not my decision as a missionary in their midst, but that decision comes as the Holy Spirit works in and through by a Christians to make those distinctions. And I've heard it made in wonderful ways by a preachers. And for example, the example I used with the blood on the land. There the gospel gets expressed in an exciting way, a way that excites me who comes from another culture and those who live there. Excites them and motivates them to share it. But it's also a way of affirming who they are. And I think Christian mission has to do with affirmation.
Has your successor, who is now there, continued very much on the same lines of affirmation? This is essential, otherwise you get kind of cut off. Do you know who's there in your place?
Well, that's a whole other question.
But it's very important when you're starting something that is pretty innovative and pretty new, and I would say
that there are among BIAP pastors and teachers those who are moving with these kinds of materials in creative ways. For example, in reflecting in worship practice, and we'll get into some of those in the days ahead. And today has been quite introductory and perhaps too heavy in the sense of explaining what I'm about here. But it's I guess, it's not the conventional missionary report. I felt the need to explain what I'm about. And tomorrow I will spend, on the following days, I will spend time with ritual descriptions on how Sori works for the Gbaya, so to speak.